got everyone. All right, the time is 9:31 on March 31st, 2023, and the meeting on the Committee for Behavior Analyst is now resuming from March 30th of 2023, and I call this meeting to order. This meeting is video hosted using Zoom. The public and parties on this agenda have been properly notified of this fact and have been supplied with meeting access instructions. Ms. Malice, would you please call roll?
Yes, Madam Chair. Ms. Stinton?
Present.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Here.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Davey?
Present.
And Dr. Rates?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Malice. Agenda item number 3, our general remarks and announcements. We have several members of the public here today. We thank you for your attendance in this meeting, being aware of the state of Arizona revised rules and statutes and regulations is definitely a part of every licensee's responsibilities, and being part of this meeting is an excellent step in that direction. I'm not sure how many of you are aware of the immense amount of work that goes into board staff taking care of getting these applicants to this point of having their license reviewed. So I would like to officially take this time to thank board staff for their immense work. We will move on a little bit now to the fact that the Board of Psychologist Examiners is approved by the BACB as an ACE continuing education provider. Attending a meeting of the Board's Committee on Behavior Analyst is eligible for continuing education credit for maintenance of BACB certification and for Arizona licensure renewal. To claim this credit, make note of the code word provided hourly throughout the meeting to report the code words to board staff for purposes of earning a continuing education credit. Look for the link on the board's meeting page for this particular meeting. We will move on now to agenda item. Let's see. The approval of minutes. Yes. So we will go down to the agenda item number 6, the approval of minutes from March 3rd of 2023's regular session minutes and March 3rd, 2023 executive session minutes. Does any member wish to offer a motion to approve these minutes?
So moved.
Before
is there a second?
Before there's a second, there I noted a change in the regular session minutes. On page 4 of the regular session minutes, let me go to that really quick. At the on the second line below the outlined lettering of C through G, there's on the second line there's a indication of a Ms. Rosnos, and that just needs to be changed to Ms. Nazario.
So pending this modification to the regular session minutes, is there a motion to approve these minutes?
I'll continue my motion. So moved.
Okay. Second.
There is a second. The motion has been made by Dr. Davey and seconded by Dr. Stenhoff. Is there any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. All opposed? The motion carries. We will now move to agenda item number 7. We're just moving right along, which is the discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendation to the board pertaining to the approval of behavior analyst applicants. As we move through this, each committee member is the lead on these applications. Let's see here. I know that we have quite a few applicants on the line today. We will do our best to move through those applicants first. So we will go ahead and get started with I am the lead on the first applicant, Rhea Diwali. I hope I pronounced that.
Ms. Denton, I do need to disclose, I was Ms. Dhaliwal's instructor while she was working on her master's degree, and also have done a couple of consultations with her, but I feel that I can review this without any bias.
Thank you. Are there any other similar comments?
Just Madam Chair, my internet connection is freaking out. I'm going to just turn my camera off for a second, but I am present.
Dr. Davey.
You're all frozen. I can hear you, but everybody, Diana's in deep thought and Dr. Stenhoff looks upset, but I'm going to fix that.
Okay. Well, we will go ahead and move forward with the review of this application. All right, Miss Dr. Stenhoff, you said it, and I didn't quite get it. So again,
well, and actually, and I see that's the
present.
Ms. Denton, that's the first time I've used that name. She usually goes by her middle name as her last name, as seen on the application.
Okay.
and on that note, Madam Chair, if I may, it took me a second to connect all of the pieces of what was just happening and making sure that I too needed to disclose, because it threw me off too. But yes, I too was an instructor at one point. I have not spoken to her outside of that course, and I'm comfortable moving forward.
Perfect. I anticipated there would be a similar comment. Okay. Let's see, Ms. Dhaliwal passed her exam on November 7th of 2022 after graduating with a Master's of Science in Applied Behavior Analysis from Arizona State University in May of 2022. She received her supervision ranging from July of 2020 until August 31st of 2022. She received all of her supervision under Arizona Licensed Behavior Analyst for a total of over 2,000 hours. I have no concerns with this application and would recommend that it moves forward to the full board for potential approval. Okay, the next applicant on the agenda is Walter Umana. Dr. Davis-Wilson, you're the lead on this application.
Yeah, so Mr. Yama passed his exam in December of 2021. He is a licensed behavior analyst in good standing in Texas. He's also a licensed teacher in New York in good standing. He did complete a master's in education from the City College of New York in May of 2014 and subsequently an ABA certificate from FIT in July of 2018. He did answer yes to question number 12 pertaining to any pending or previous charges. He did outline all the information related to that matter and provided the appropriate documentation. He received 1,500 hours from a licensed behavior analyst unfortunately had a very difficult time accessing the documentation for those hours. He was able to provide the board documentation of those attempts, as well as the response that he did finally receive after multiple attempts. So I don't see any reason as to why we would hold up the application. I in alignment with previous circumstances like this, I think that I would recommend it be forwarded to the full board for approval, but that we also request to have that supervisor attend a future meeting and or refer that supervisor to the BACB for the concerns around not responding in the timely fashion and the ethics code violations. I was going to say my and or was that generally we've been requesting them to come and come before the board. I mean, there's substantial information that suggests that perhaps that isn't going to be a request that is responded to or followed up on. And so I'm not sure if it makes sense to utilize the state resources or to just go ahead and say, hey, BACB, if you want to look at this, cool. If you don't, we did our due diligence.
Yeah. I tend to follow with you, Dr. Davis-Wilson, or Madam Chair, Dr. Davis-Wilson, I tend to follow with you on that. I think alerting the BACB is a proper mechanism there versus our efforts.
We will go ahead and move on to the next applicant. I am going to move to Nicole Vetter, and it appears that she is on the line here today. Thank you for attending. I am the lead on this application, and I will move forward with her review. Ms. Vetter passed her exam on January 7th of 2022 after graduating in May of 2021 with a Master's of Arts in Applied Behavior Analysis from Ball State University. She received her supervision from October 1st of 2020 until, September of 2021. She received her supervision in Idaho and in Washington. Idaho does not require licensure. However, Washington does require licensure as a behavior analyst. She received 1,500 hours of supervision with the appropriate supervisors who were licensed at the appropriate time in the respective states, state. It is also notable that Ms. Vetter is licensed in Washington currently as a behavior analyst and has been in good standing since January 13th of 2022. I do not have any concerns about this application and would recommend that it moves forward to the full board for approval. Okay. Let me see who else is here. Let's move on to Samantha Wieman. Dr. Stenhoff, you're the lead on this application.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Wieman was certified as a BCBA in December of 2022. She graduated in August of 21 from ASU with a Master's of Arts in Special Education and Concentration of Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 1,506.5 hours of supervision under two BCBAs performing her supervision in the state of Arizona. Ms. Wieman is also an Arizona certified elementary and special education teacher in good standing. I did note on page 11, which is the multiple supervisors document that's provided by the board, that, I need to unbury my document again. Ms. Rogers was not licensed, and it was also affirmed in an email between Ms. Wieman and board staff. According to my calculations, Ms. Wieman will need to complete an additional 520 hours under an Arizona licensed behavior analyst to meet the licensure requirements unless Ms. Wieman can provide documentation indicating otherwise. Also of note, board staff requested another photo to meet the requirements of the board, I'm not sure that that's been remedied according to the documentation that I have and her application that has not been taken care of. There's also a requested change in the dates of supervision on her forms, and those also do not appear to be remedied. So just some concerns there. The other concern I have is that one of her supervisors did complete several hundred hours with her from out of state, and it was she appears, and I might be incorrect on this, to be employed by an agency that does provide supervision professionally to individuals. But she is not licensed, and so thus performing behavior analytic work in the state of Arizona unlicensed. And so that another concern that I had with this application. So as noted by you, Madam Chair, there was Ms. Wieman is on the call, and so perhaps she can address some of those. Dr. Davis-Wilson, Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I'm going to let you.
Dr. Davis-Wilson.
I did not mean to interrupt you, Dr. Stenhoff. I apologize. I had a thought and I just wanted to make sure I raised my hand, but I actually do want to hear from the applicant first.
Okay. So Ms. Wieman, if, I noted, some issues with the application, and perhaps we could start with, a very simple one, but are you able to provide a photo as requested by the board staff that they requested from you?
Did resend a picture right after it was requested, so I'm not sure if it just wasn't submitted or, but I have the email showing that it was sent.
Okay. All right. And I also noted that the email, at least one of the pictures you sent, the file size was too large. Maybe you and board staff can kind of clarify that. Let's move on to the second issue. You were supervised by Ms. Rogers, and I made an assumption, maybe you can correct that assumption, that she was employed by Hume House as a supervisor that is located out of the state of Arizona.
Correct. So I originally got my supervision through Hume House, and they set me up with Raven Rogers. And I didn't realize until partially through that she wasn't licensed in Arizona. So I contacted Hume House, and then they provided me with a different supervisor.
Okay. So, but in fact, the other supervisor, I think it's a DeRosa. Is that correct? DeRosa. Ms. DeRosa provided about 980 hours, but that was, do you have other documentation, which I hope you do, that you gained that other 520 hours under a licensed BCBA or licensed behavior analyst that in the, from the state of Arizona?
Yes, I received additional hours for her from her to make up for the hours with Raven Rogers.
Okay. From my review, I did not see that documentation in your application. Is that correct that it wasn't provided to the board?
It should have. When I went through our board in Arizona, she had me rewrite it, which was resubmitted to her, and I can double check through my email. And then I also had Cheyenne fill out her portion.
Madam Chair, Dr. Senhoff, if I may, it does look like the supervision was extended for Ms. DeRosa. So if you look at the dates on the multiple supervisor form, it goes through 2021, but if you look on the form that Ms. DeRosa submitted, she is attesting through 2022.
Okay. 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 Thank you, Dr. Davis Wilson. Okay. Well, in that case, I think the documentation is there. I'm sorry, I missed that. And then board staff, is it possible to confirm whether the photo was corrected?
Dr. Stenhoff, she submitted a second photo on January 23rd, but it was the same photo just from about the chest up. So when I downloaded it, it opened up to a full photo, like the original photo. So okay. I believe I have two different photos. I believe I have two of the same photo.
Okay. So Ms. Wieman, would it be possible to provide a completely different photo that would match what Ms. Malis just indicated of the requirement of a photo for your file?
Madam Chair, or alternatively, resize the photo so that we are not, you know, forced on our end to try to manipulate it and crop it and resize it. That's not something that we have the time to do. So that would be ideal for the applicant to make those adjustments and send us something that's appropriately sized.
Okay.
Yes, I'm able to do that.
Great. Thank you. All right. So given that, I think then I would recommend this move forward to the board for approval pending the arrival of the corrected photo.
Okay. Dr. Davis Wilson?
Yes, Madam Chair, if I may, I do have some concerns, not on this application. I don't disagree with Dr. Stenhoff I have concerns on specifically the Whom House and the fact that they sat before us and said, we would not be seeing another applicant that has completed this many hours. We only had one other Arizona person, and that individual had not started their hours. They were just in orientation. So I do have concerns about the unlicensed practice of the supervisor. And I do not feel that our last correspondence and encounters with them remediated that concern. And so I think that, speaking to Ms. Raven would be the next steps there for, that potential unlicensed practice as we've done consistently. But I do want to note that I'm also concerned that we had another BCBA, the owner of the organization, attest to us that this would not be something that we would be seeing, that this was remediated before hours were accrued, and that we did not have any other licensed supervisor under her organization providing services to anybody in the state, providing behavior analytics services. So I am concerned that that is on the record. It is something she attested to us, and that that is not an accurate statement.
Madam Chair, Dr. Davis-Wilson, I hear you on that. I too looked at I went back and looked at the dates on the Whom House supervision, which were, April of 2020 and October of 2021. And I could not remember when we kind of had the discussion with them. And so if they had actually ended it, and maybe the applicant can give us some understanding of how the termination between her and Ms. DeRosa went. I'm kind of wondering if that does actually jive with the actual timeline of them saying, hey, we're done. We recognize that we have an error. But I don't remember the timeline, to be honest. But when I looked at it to say, 2021, at least a year plus ago, it seemed to me like we had the conversation around or about that same time, but I don't recall, Madam Chair.
Ms. Pakenon.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And just to augment what Dr. Davey was thinking, I was formulating my thoughts, which align very closely to his. I think that to Dr. Davis-Wilson's point, I don't recall if the person who insisted that there were no other instances going forward of, what is unlicensed supervision, I don't remember that we asked if any had been, if any had occurred in the past. So staff can go back and do some research and bring this back to you so that we understand both exactly what was said and also look at those timeframes very closely, if that's what you would like.
I think that that's that part is fine. I guess my question, though, so there's that concern, but then for the unlicensed practice, I think given how we've handled it in the past, I still think we should move forward with requesting that that individual come before the board so that we can speak to them about that period of unlicensed practice.
I would agree with that, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Okay, so perhaps this will come back as an agenda item for future meetings when we get later into our agenda today. Ms. Wieman.
Madam Chair, just to be clear, though, we are going to move this application forward for approval by the full board, correct? Okay, thank you. Just wanted to make sure we weren't holding that up.
Yes, and Ms. Wieman, thank you so much for being present today. It is clear that your participation was able to remediate some of the concerns. So I think you are a testament to how beneficial it is for applicants to attend these meetings and to be able to articulate specificities of your supervision experience.
Thank you.
Absolutely. All right, we will move on to the next applicant who is present on the line today, Kelly Ferrand. Dr. Stenhoff, you are also the lead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Fromm was certified as a BCBA in January of 2023 and graduated from September of 2022 from North Central University with a Master's of Science in Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 2,114.70 hours of supervision under multiple Arizona LBAs at Adventure ABA. There was a question regarding the start date of one of her supervisors, Paige Huff, but Ms. Ferrand addressed this in a reply to board staff. So given that, I don't note any concerns for this application and recommend that it move forward to the board for approval.
Thank you, Dr. Stenhoff. I'm going to come back to you again because the next applicant is also on the line. The next applicant that we will review is Jenna Reynolds. You are the lead.
Thank you. Madam Chair, with your permission, I'd like to also possibly tie this in with agenda item number 8.
Permission granted.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Reynolds was certified as a BCBA in August of 2019 and graduated in June of 2019 from Capella University's with Master's of Science in Psychology and a specialization in Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 2,098 hours of supervision under BCBAs in Illinois, which at the time did not require licensure. I did not note any concerns with this application and recommend that it move forward to the board for approval. And given that, we were to have a discussion regarding action with her withdrawal request. I'm not sure what we needed to say on that other than, I think it's fine that she withdraws her request for universal licensure and then go ahead and move forward with a standard licensure request as she submit her documentation for that.
Am I right on this one, or did she request the withdrawal of her general application?
Let's see, just gonna... I think she requested her universal, or my, I think through the discussion that she had with board staff, there was a realization that she was not in fact licensed and thus was not eligible for universal licensure.
I would prefer a motion from the committee that there is a recommendation that she be allowed to withdraw the application for universal recognition.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that's an item further down on the agenda, but it makes sense to address it now before you get to her application.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Yes, she submitted a general application only, and she, with the emails, requested to withdraw that application to be able to submit the universal recognition application. But she has not submitted the universal recognition application. So the only application that she has is the general. So that's the one that is on the agenda for consideration regarding the withdrawal.
Okay.
I think what I would like to propose here is, you know, the applicant is present, that potentially we decline her request to withdraw her application if she would like to move forward with licensure, because it does appear that her general application meets the requirements per your substantive review, Dr. Stenhoff, to move forward with licensure via the general BA application for licensure.
All right, so Madam Chair, may I address Ms. Reynolds to see if she would agree to that?
Yes.
Ms. Reynolds, you've heard the conversation. Would you like to proceed with withdrawing your application at this time, or would you like us to put it forth to the full board for consideration of approval?
I'd like to just put it forward for the general application.
Okay. I think that's a great
idea. A good idea. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
So pertaining to, are we okay to hop to agenda item number 8, Ms. Galvin?
You may.
before I hop over there, Dr. Davis-Wilson?
I'll wait.
Okay. So with agenda item number eight, agenda item number eight was discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding application withdrawal request from Jenna Reynolds. Is there a motion?
I make a motion that the withdrawal is denied. Is that okay?
Is there a second?
I'll second.
There has been a motion made by Dr. Stenhoff and a second by Dr. Reitz. Is there any discussion?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I just wanted to just note, and because we do have Ms. Reynolds on the line, I just want to make sure, Ms. Reynolds, that you, being that there isn't consistency across licensure and that not all states require licensure, that you do recognize that you are coming into a state that requires it. And as such, you're going to want to be familiar with all of the statutes. And then, you know, perhaps invite Ms. Reynolds or encourage Ms. Reynolds to attend some of these meetings so that she can hear and learn about what happens in a state that does have a regulatory board, because I think that's where some of the confusion in this process has come about. And while this is the application phase and it's easy, if there's a violation of statute, it's not as easy to undo. So I would highly encourage Ms. Reynolds to take this opportunity to recognize that operating in a state that has a practice and title statute means that there's a different set of statutory requirements she needs to be familiar with. Encourage her to join the Arizona Association for Behavior Analysis and to attend, you know, their events that they're frequently doing to have these conversations to educate, just as a means of discussion.
Ms. Pakenon?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I also want to speak to the new application system, the new portal. There are many things that, you know, we are still adjusting and fine tuning with the portal. But one of the features that I'm extremely grateful for is our ability to provide very detailed, very explicit, and very well positioned instructional content to applicants. So what I'm seeing, unfortunately, are too many instances where that information isn't either being reviewed or processed or whatever the case may be. Every time someone logs into the system to initiate an application, to resume work on an application, they're taken to the instructions, the main instructions page, which I do want to share that with you. Zakiya will help me remember to do that. So you can appreciate how much detail we go into to advise applicants of what they need to do, what they need to know, what not to do, and so forth. And so I really do want to impress on, you know, anyone who's listening and, you know, anyone who might hear this information in the future that, you know, please follow those instructions. Please take the time to review them, download them if that is at all helpful, because I think there's just too many opportunities here for applicants to take shortcuts or to dismiss or disregard those instructions. And that's to their detriment. So I just wanted to explain that it's not as though applicants have little or no guidance in the system. They have a tremendous amount. They just need to stop and review it and follow it carefully. Thank you.
Ms. Pakenon. Is there any further discussion? There has been a motion made by Dr. Stenhoff that has been seconded by Dr. Reitz. Discussion has been had. All in favor of denying the request to withdraw the general application from Jenna Reynolds, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed? The motion carries. Thank you for being present, Ms. Reynolds. Again, your attendance has helped your application to be moved forward without additional correspondence needed from board staff. So thank you very much for being here. Okay, I don't see any other applicants that have not been reviewed on the line today. Dr. Reitz, No? Okay.
Sorry, I thought you were saying there were no more applicants to review, and I think I have the final one. I didn't want to be left out.
Yeah, we should have three additional applicants to review. I will just start back up at the top and go in order on the agenda. Joanna Schumacher is the next. I'm the lead on this application. Are there any recusals, perhaps, or no? Okay, I thought I remembered something. All right. Ms. Schumacher passed her exam on January 18th of 2023 after graduating on August 9th of 2022 with a Master's of Arts in Special Education with a concentration in Applied Behavior Analysis from Arizona State University. Ms. Schumacher received her supervision from May of 2021 until November of 2022 by two supervisors in the state of Arizona who were both licensed and in good standing. The total number of supervision hours was 2,005 hours, which exceeds the 1,500 hours that are required in the state of Arizona. There are no concerns at this time from me about this application, and I would recommend that it moves forward to the full board for approval. The next applicant that we will review is Ayala Adams. Dr. Davis-Wilson, you're the lead on this application.
Yes, so Ms. Adams completed her exam in July of 2021. She received supervised hours in California where licensure is not required, and that was for the required 1,500 hours. She did complete her master's from ASU in their online teaching program. That was in 2016. I reviewed this application and I did not note any concerns, and I recommend it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
We are finally to you, Dr. Reitz. Ashley Price is our last applicant to review, and you are the lead.
Thank you. So Ms. Price received her board certification in May of 2022. She completed a Master's of Arts degree at ASU in the special education with an emphasis in ABA, completing that in August of 2021. She had her supervision hours across multiple supervisors here in Arizona between March of 2020 and November of 2021 for a total of 1,670 hours. In reviewing the supervisors, they all met our qualifications. So I did not see any issue and would recommend that we move this forward to the board for approval.
Thank you, Dr. Reitz. As we have finished with all applications, does any member wish to offer a motion for the applications?
So moved.
Second.
There is a second. Dr. Davey has made the motion to move forward the applications as recommended. Dr. Stenhoff has seconded that. Is there any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. All opposed? The motion carries. Let's see here. Is Ms. Malice, is there a code word?
Yes, the code word is Eiffel Tower.
Thank you, Ms. Malice. I thought maybe we'd get that in a little early as we are like powering through this agenda pretty rapidly. Okay. Let's see. We are now moving on to agenda item number 9, which is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding proposed legislation. Ms. Pakanon, can you please provide a summary of this agenda item for the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair. I have a very short list of bills that I just want to highlight today. So just for purposes of where we are with the legislative session, what we're seeing is that so crossover has already occurred where bills that were passed by the chamber of introduction
are now in the other chamber, and they're finishing work on those crossover bills. So we're going to start to see committee work dwindle significantly. I'm already seeing that some committees have no bills left to review. And so it's sort of that time frame where there are there's more of a concerted effort to try to craft a budget proposal for the next fiscal year. But that being said, there are still a few bills that seem to have some life in them that we should be aware of. There were many that didn't get out of the chamber of introduction. And what I'm seeing is this interesting trend where even bills that had strong support in the first chamber, that doesn't translate over to support in the other chamber. So a lot of bills that I thought had great momentum don't appear to have that now. So that's been interesting. So the one bill that, and this is a great example of what I just said, on your list on page 2, House Bill 2429. This is the bill, we've mentioned it before, where it would preclude a licensing board from denying to an otherwise qualified applicant a license if they have certain drug convictions in their history. And, you know, as we've acknowledged, I don't remember a single instance where that has been the case by the committee or the board where you have found that that type of criminal history warranted a denial of license. So this bill passed unanimously in the first chamber in the House. It's not moving in the Senate. And I thought this was a no-brainer. So this is just interesting that it still seems to be going nowhere. But notwithstanding that, it's just something that, you know, I don't think is really a concern or would require the committee or the board to make any sort of adjustments. I just don't see that. Any questions about that? Then at the bottom of page 3, Senate Bill 1087. So this is that bill that would require 90-10 boards, fee charging boards to on every year adjust its fees to suppress the fund balance at 50% of the appropriation. So for example, this agency's appropriation is $660,000. So half of that would be $330,000. So that means that if this bill were to pass and be signed, we would never be able to expand the fund to do any, to do really any sort of special one-time, you know, projects or, you know, anything that would be, you know, necessary to expand our capacity. Hiring new staff would be, you know, one of the challenges. We've talked about this in terms of, you know, could this ever permit the behavior analyst to become, you know, an independent board with its own fund? I see that being suppressed. So right now, this bill, it's still support for this bill is pretty mixed. It's not the vote has been really close in this case in the Senate. It was 16 to 14. I think that was maybe a partisan vote. It's sort of, you know, I'm seeing the same thing in the House. Really, we're waiting to see if it goes to the Rules Committee. If the Rules Committee doesn't hear it, it's dead. If the Rules Committee considers that it's proper for consideration, it will go to the floor. So something that I'm watching very carefully. And I think if we do or don't see movement on this bill next week, that's going to be very telling. Any questions or comments about that? And then the last one is on the bottom of page 4, Senate Bill 1333. This is the bill that would task the Department of Health Services. We are independent from that, you know, large agency, but DHS would be responsible for creating a centralized database of disciplinary, I think it's only revocations, specifically revocations by all of the health boards. And so, you know, I've articulated why I think there's been an identified need for this kind of tool, you know, information for the public to be able to access and for other boards to cross-access that information too. So our licensing specialists would need to check that database for revocations that were issued by other boards when we're processing applications for licensure. I do think that it's curious to me that there's a time restriction on this. However, because I know in the example that I shared earlier of a PT who emerged many years later to be granted a massage therapist license, the span of time was more than 5 years. So I think it's curious that, you know, we only get a finite amount of time to look at this information. But nonetheless, I see this bill, you know, really moving forward, and it definitely has bipartisan support. Questions about that? So in terms of what that would mean to us, I don't see that as being all that problematic, because especially with our new system, I can see us, you know, transferring that kind of data to DHS pretty simply, pretty efficiently. I don't think the burden on us will be really significant in any way. And we don't issue all that many revocations, you know, all things considered. So I think that's all I had to discuss, but if anyone else wants to talk about any other bills on this list, please let me know. Okay, thanks.
My only question is, are we hearing anything about any, you know, as we get closer towards the end of this, do we have any crazy strike, anything kind of grumblings around the legislature at this point that we're aware of?
Madam Chair, thank you, Dr. Davey. I had the pleasure of spending some time yesterday to look at strike everything bills, and there are lots of interesting proposals among them. Nothing that would cause any concern for us. I did notice there was a bill that prescribes sort of civil penalties to any state officials who you know, take some sort of discriminatory action against other individuals. In our case, it would be, you know, applicants, presumably, or possibly respondents. But the way that this language was so broadly worded in this strike everything bill, it just didn't even seem, I don't even know if that's, if that legislation is realistic. So that was the only instance of, I think it was 192 bills that I looked at that I thought, okay, maybe that one is worth paying attention to, but nothing else of concern. But this is the time, to your point, this is the time, of course, when we start to see a lot of that happen. So I just have to be hypervigilant.
Any further questions for Ms. Pakenon? Thank you for that overview, Ms. Pakenon. I cannot imagine how much enjoyment you receive reviewing all of this action. All right, we will move on to agenda item number 10, which is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recent updates from the Behavior Analyst Certification Board. Ms. Pakenon, will you provide a summary of this agenda item as well?
Yes, Madam Chair. So this update consists of two topics. The first is that we reached out to the BACB for assistance in developing a resource, really a tool for this committee that will, it's intended to help you determine if an applicant presents having received their education and training at points in the, we'll call it distant past, how you will ascertain what were the requirements of the BACB at that particular time. So the reason for this is that for, I don't know, since the beginning of time, perhaps, for the behavior analyst, you've had a statute that does authorize the board to consider applicants by reciprocity. And so when I came to work for this board, I learned that the rule that had been written to implement that statute sort of fell short and didn't actually achieve the objective of establishing a reciprocity pathway. So we made another attempt more recently, as I'm sure you recall. And so that rulemaking came into effect February 21st, so just over a month ago. So now we have a true articulated pathway to reciprocity in the behavior analyst rules. And so accordingly, we needed to figure out, you know, how do we process that type of application? And the challenge that staff realized existed is that today's requirements are tomorrow's reciprocity, because the requirements, they exist for a specific defined period of time, and then they shift, and then they shift. And so there really isn't a way for us from a system perspective to say this is reciprocity, because reciprocity would consist of many different iterations. And the more we march through time, the more iterations there are. And so what we decided to do was to, shift the burden to the committee to recognize when you are looking at an application by reciprocity, but at least you have this tool or this resource that gives you the guidance to determine, okay, this applicant, by virtue of having completed their education in 2010 and completed their training in 2011, here's the yardstick that I am measuring this applicant against. And so this will continue to change to be enhanced over time as the requirements change. And I'd really like your thoughts and your feedback, not only on this tool, but also on the strategy, if you see it working, because I haven't come up with a better solution than this.
I do have a question to ensure that I'm understanding this. If we were to have this reciprocity pathway, and we're looking at these different timeframes, these periods of time where the BACB had different expectations for certification in place. If someone was, for example, they were certified between January 1st, 2005 and December 31st of 2014, and they were to have completed an intensive practicum and they received 10% supervision, could they potentially become licensed in Arizona without completing the 1500 hours? Is that what reciprocity means?
So, Madam Chair, not only would you rely on this tool, but you would also rely on the rule. So you would need to look at what the rule specifies. And then I would first look at the rule and then the tool in that order. So hopefully between the two, you do come away with, some clarity in terms of, were all the requirements of the rule that are prescribed by the rule met? And then, does the tool affirm that? So that's sort of how I see this working.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
My brain's kind of mush today, but the 1500 hours, that's in statute. So is that so is our license by reciprocity, right? So which one, how does that work? So if the statute says, hey, we'll have a license by reciprocity process, and then we have a statute that says, oh, you must have 1500 hours, is it that the license, that reciprocity still has to meet that 1500 hours because so the rule isn't in like that specific situation. It's not even just the rule, right? It would be the statute. Like it kind of trumps all of that. So I didn't want to interrupt. I think the tool is great. And I love the direction you're going with it. I just wanted to clarify on that particular issue because it is statutory. It doesn't matter what the rule says because the statute says it must be 1500 hours.
Yes, Madam Chair, Dr. Davis-Wilson, thank you for the correction. So the sequence is first review the statute, then the rule, and then cross-reference to the tool. So you're correct. I neglected to recall that there is very specific requirements in statute. Great detail in the rule, which I am trying to remember the citation. I'm pulling it up now.
Ms. Pacanon, if I can add to that just one kind of in your defense, but two, just as a reminder, like our statutes, that is really the only outlier. You know what I mean? And so I do think that by explaining it the way that you were, I think that that should be how it is. And if you recall, we just haven't had, you know, legislated COVID and all that. But in the sunset the was that the audit? Yeah, right. What is the audit? In the audit, we were given direction that statute was too prescriptive. And so we have it on the review. And I think the idea would be, to your point, is that the rules would be more descriptive anyway. And so I think I totally agree with how in theory you were explaining it in theory how it should work. We just have that one outlier that I just wanted to point out.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely right.
Madam Chair, quick question on that. So is that okay, Madam Chair?
Yes.
You know, with regard to the revised statutes that were updated, so to Dr. Davis Wilson's point, you know, number one in there, the number of hours required for supervised experience must be at least, right? That's the term in there that sticks out, that, you know, that's the one that kicks out the 750 that was available to some early behavior analysts and sets the bar at that 1500 mark, right? And if I remember correctly from early discussions with Dr. Wexler and Dr. Bohansky and Dr. Malott, you know, there was a lot of discussion around how that number in of itself, 1500, is extremely low compared to other licensed professionals across the state, whether it's psychologists, licensed clinical social workers, substance abuse workers, I mean, SLPs, whatever you want to look at, you know, they're in the 3000 area. And we, you know, we discussed with them that was a, you know, this is a starting point. The field is young, you know, that number will continue to ramp up. The BACB has put that in place in terms of continuing to step forward. So my only question around this is, if we go in and tinker with that number one of that at least 1500 hours, I just want us to be very cautious that we are not creating a ripple effect to those that might have been licensed 5 years ago, 10 years, or well, not licensed, certified 5 years ago, 10 years ago, because we just went in and cleaned that up to help us not have some of those problems. And so I just want us to be very cautious with however we move that forward.
Madam Chair, yeah. May Dr. Davey, I agree with you. And I think we've been very careful in the rules to make sure we have those dates. So like when we say things like, you know, that must be aligned with the national certifying body's supervision requirements. And then we have that caveat of like for all experience after this date, for your exact reason, because if they continue to increase their hours and we don't have that. But I think the point I was just trying to make is that in the audit, and what's consistent with how the statutes are, and this is what was at least presented to us in the audit, is that statute itself is too prescriptive and should be more general to let the rules have that fluid part. So the removal would be at the statute component to then use the rules to guide that. And that was what in the sunset audit, what was expressed as a standard, like they just felt that particular rule did not align with the other statutory language across other boards in the state, and that it was too prescriptive.
Yeah, Ms. Pacanon? Sorry, Dr. Davey.
Dr. Davey can have the floor if he wants to.
I just was going to say, like, I hear all this. I just want to, like, the 1500 to me, like, I'll need to think a little bit about this and process some of this. And Dr. Davis Wilson, I totally appreciate your point of view on that. I just am not sure that I am overly concerned with the number of hours required language in the statute. I believe that is a baseline that we will hold in licensure in perpetuity. Like it can always go to 3,000, it can always go to 10,000, but it will never drop below where we started on day one. And so I just opening up the statute, like maybe there's other ways, like you said, in rules for us to kind of deal with some things. But I do just get nervous about messing with the statutes from time to time, but I'm going to think about it. I'm not disagreeing with you. I just need to probably process some of this.
Well, and Dr. Davey, I agree with you. I think my understanding is that particular, because I also don't, like, we've gotten to a point where we've worked around it for so long that like it doesn't even faze me. My point is just in our audit, the board was told and given direction to address that. But then COVID happened. And then we haven't done any statutory changes yet. And so I hear you and I agree. I don't think we need to like rush out and go do it, but we have been told by another, I don't know, are they a governing body, but like people have audited the Board of Psychologist Examiners and have said, you guys are wrong here. You need to fix this. And our response was, okay, we will when there's that opportunity. And then COVID happened, all these other things. So obviously we have ample, reasons to say, here's all these other things. I was just bringing up, we've already been told that really is not aligned with what the state's expectations are. And so that's all I was saying. I don't disagree with you on all the other things. I wouldn't rush out and change it, but I really do appreciate, and of course, Dr. Dave, you and I in the early years of licensure sat before the psychology board, and we've talked to the BACB to get data and we've tried all these things, to address that. So I can appreciate where our early efforts of the concern of our profession being that prescriptive at statute, we presented those concerns. And unfortunately, our arguments, swayed in a different direction, but now we've got another state entity coming in and saying, well, wait a second. No, that should be done in rule, not in statute. And so I think that's all my point is procedurally. I think procedurally the psychology board in the early days, should have probably had it more general in statute and then approved rules that were more prescriptive. And I think that's where we're at now is we're being told it should look that way. But I agree with you. I'm not in any hurry to change. All these other things have happened. I wouldn't pay money to go do it, but we have been told that when legislation opens up, we need to fix that because it's not aligned with the audit.
Ms. Packin, I just want to make one other statement about that. And Ms. Packin, I could fill us in, or maybe Ms. Galvin can. The audit that was done that was returned to us, was that that was conducted by the previous administration, correct? And the feedback that was provided to us around different changes in statutes and rules around even diversity and inclusion that was sent to the board, that information came from the previous administration. Does it still hold moving forward under the current administration, or are we allowed to revisit that?
Madam Chair, may I answer?
Sorry.
That's fine. Madam Chair, may I answer?
Yes.
So the audit is conducted by the Office of the Auditor General, and that happens to be an arm of the Arizona State Legislature. So it's actually affiliated with the legislature. It isn't an executive branch agency. So that being said, we are accountable periodically, to submit to this audit process every so often. In our case, and it varies. So we received an 8-year continuance. So I'm going to start gearing up and preparing, in all the ways for an audit to be initiated as early as 2026. So that's when we can expect, them to come back. And for all we know, there may be, this issue may or may not be, one that they raise, it may be one that they return to. So, we simply don't know. We'll have to take a look at that. And I guess I really wanted to, first, I wanted to am remiss because we're not citing the statute that we're talking about. So I want everyone who's here to have the benefit of knowing that we're talking about 32.2091.03. So, and to Dr. Davis Wilson's point, just from the experience that I have and the perspective that I have, it is prescriptive language. And I understand, the motivation for why it was established as such. I think that if I had been here, I would have at least tried to make the case to that board at that time that it really isn't uncommon, when we're looking at whether you call it endorsement or reciprocity, that there needs to be some acknowledgement that for points in the past, the training, education, examination, pass point, all of those things were what they were. And so, we need to be, if we truly want to allow endorsement and reciprocity, reciprocity to be application pathways, licensure pathways, we need to acknowledge these. So, for example, for decades, the training and education to become a physical therapist was merely a bachelor's degree plus a training certificate. And so that shifted in 2002 briefly to a master's degree and then very soon thereafter, doctorate degrees. And so the language is written in statute very generally so that it doesn't slam the door in anybody's face if they were, educated in GASP 1992, which wasn't all that long ago. But, it also, there's a clear pathway for anyone who just graduated and completed their training and just passed the exam. So, so I do think this is something that we need to have more conversation around. So what I'm hoping to do is that we are able to supply, because Misty's team, they quickly understood what we needed. They responded so swiftly. I think from my perspective, I'm not the one applying it, but I really would like your feedback. And if you need more time, that's fine. But I really want to circle back to Misty with, your reactions and your feedback to this resource.
I think my initial reaction is that it's a fantastic resource. It saves a decent chunk of time trying to do the research ourselves to go back and see the differences across the time. So I think that it's a great resource to utilize.
Great. Well, I hope you get some practice soon.
Okay. Is there any further? Oh, Dr. Davis Wilson.
On this particular or on the topic of BACB updates, I don't know if you guys saw, but Misty did get the Jerry Shook Award of the Year for her advocacy efforts and work. And I think that that is work that she has. Her passion for regulatory work and behavior analysis is just amazing. And she has been an amazing resource to us. She, I envision a world where we have an ASPPB, and I really do think that she's going to be the one that creates it or, paves that way. So I wanted to note for the record, that she did receive that award, very well deserved, that our board is extremely appreciative of her responsiveness and her efforts. And, she's worked so hard on having a regulator's, email form and making sure that the BACB website's updated. And she has, heard some of our conversations around, like immunity for complaints and things like that. And she works so hard to advocate to make sure that regulators have what they need. So I wanted to make sure that everybody was aware of her efforts and the subsequent award she received for them. And then perhaps propose that whether it be from the chair and board staff in combination, that we draft kind of a congratulatory email thanking her for those efforts and congratulating her on that on that award and just letting her know how much we do appreciate her and the work that she does. I think that sometimes in her role and in the work she does, I think it can easily go unnoticed. She's kind of a lot behind the scenes. And so I think it would be nice to just acknowledge, you know, the work that she has done, and that it wasn't just a group of, you know, it wasn't just a group that said, hey, we read all these awards and we think it should go to you, but that we second that, recommendation, and that we very much also agree that that it was a well-deserved award, and we are appreciative of everything she does for us, with us, around us, in collaboration.
I mean, I remember sitting with her in the ballroom in downtown Phoenix in a corner with Jerry Shook and her and Dan Davidson talking about the fact that we were going to move towards licensure, like in 2007. I mean, she was there, like we were in this gigantic room that would hold like thousands. And there was like four of us in a corner sitting on chairs being like, holy crap, what are we doing?
It was so funny, Dr. Davey. I actually was, I was talking to the division today about a conference event, and they were like, what about the Phoenix Convention Center? And I'm like, man, the only conference I remember there was 2007 ABAI and all of that. So I was actually just talking to someone about that this morning and reminiscing on those same memories. So yeah, she's, I mean, all of you guys.
I need to make sure to the history, the people that are working on the history stuff and some of the discussions that we make sure to include that conversation, because that was a critical conversation that occurred with Jerry, Misty, Dan, myself, and I forget who else was there, but I'm sure there were others.
I was there. I was a student. I was a brand new, like, first year, had just met Dan. He was my advisor. So yeah, I was a student. So I was there as a student because he had asked me to be there. But I didn't say anything and I was really lost, I'll be honest. I remember the meeting. I remember all the random pieces about it, as far as its point in history, but as far as understanding anything you guys were talking about, my background was in speech and language. I thought I was going to become a speech pathologist. I had no idea what you guys were talking about. But we do have Ms. Elzy here. And so perhaps Ms. Elzy, can make, just a note, cause I think you're right. I think we kind of start at the 2008, 2009, and we missed that really important, ABAI that occurred here in Phoenix at that point. So thank you for bringing that up.
So there's a second part, Madam Chair, if you want me to continue, I can segue to the second part of this BACB update, which again, credit to Ms. Bloom. She recognized when I expressed to her our interest in using the mass email service of the BACB. We see an opportunity to communicate some of the concerns that we are starting to see, which cross over our borders. So what I have done here is I've composed with some of her, she sort of gave me some parameters to work within, because, you know, we may not be able to say entirely what we want to say. It is their listserv. It is their service after all. But I presented some bullet points where I think in general, this is what we want to communicate to all the BCBAs in the universe about informing themselves when they consider possibly having some sort of a role that touches on Arizona statutes and rules. So I'm really interested in hearing your thoughts about this content. If you feel like I need all kinds of help and I'm far off the mark, I guess what my suggestion might be is that, you know, maybe the chair can appoint someone from the committee to work closely with me. I don't want to get into a situation where seven of us or eight of us are wordsmithing this content. It won't be productive, but, you know, maybe one other member of this committee together, you know, we can present a pretty good draft. The draft would need to go to the board. So the board would need to approve of this content before we even go to the BACB and say, here's what we want to say. The word deceptively was not mine. It was actually Ms. Bloom's. So that's a reflection of how well she understands this issue that we're dealing with.
I think in terms of feedback for that, I think it's addressing the issue that we've talked about in past meetings where we have discussed that mid-tier position and what that is. And we do have a lot of different agencies that are coming into the state of Arizona that are needing to become aware of our regulations in the state and what can be done and what can't be done. So I do think that it's definitely a good place to begin.
And Madam Chair, I did, you know, when this term started to emerge about, you know, a mid-tier provider, I scoured our website, you know, anything that we present to the public just to see if, you know, were we the genesis unintentionally of this term? And I could not find any instance where this is this has been used by us. So its genesis is still unclear, but you know, we need to correct the misconceptions about it.
And Ms. Pacanon, I do think that it's beneficial that within this draft, we do have the link to the licensure exemptions that are established by law to clearly be directing people to what exactly is said, you know, just kind of hand holding as far as please look at this.
So I'm looking for some direction. Do you want, do you feel this needs more work? In which case, you know, do you like the suggestion I made for someone to work with me? Do you feel like this content is, it's perfect and it can go to the board tomorrow? So that's, you know, we still have to follow a process, so we can't issue this tomorrow as eager as we might be. So, what is the committee's pleasure?
Is there any discussion from committee members for Ms. Pacanon?
Well, I mean, I guess I kind of flip it back. Ms. Pacanon, do you think it's ready for prime time, or do you think you need one of us to kind of sit with you, go through it, pick it a little, you know, provide a little bit more detail on it based on, you know, your previous experience with all of us and these types of tools? I don't want to slow down the process, but if you're asking like, hey, I would like a second set of eyes, then I think that's acceptable.
Madam Chair, Dr. Davies, so I want to make sure, there are a few things I want to make sure of, that I didn't omit something that was important. I also don't want to overwhelm the reader with too much content. We all know that people will just sort of, if there's just too much to read, they won't. So I'm trying to strike that balance between, you know, I stand by the accuracy of the statements. I think they're all accurate. Of course, the board will be the ultimate, you know, they'll determine that, you know, whether I'm right or wrong. I just want to make sure that I didn't omit anything. And if you think that I've been succinct enough in making and direct enough in making the points that I know this committee at least wants to make.
Hi, Ms. Pacanon, I wonder if we are sending out a mass email potentially pending board's approval to all BACB certificates. When we're looking at this, you know, we're not just seeing issues with that mid-tier provider, but like even today, we are seeing issues with people providing supervision without being licensed in the state, would it be beneficial to articulate both the mid-tier challenge as well as the supervision aspect?
Yeah, Madam Chair, as I read that I'm not sure that this goes that far enough with respect to the supervision piece, because really that's so often an issue. So here's what I'm going to ask for. I'm going to ask for someone to work with me to help refine this before we forward it to the board. So whoever wants to spend time with me in this capacity, I'll welcome the assistance.
Is there a volunteer for Ms. Pakenon?
I'm happy to help. Do it.
You have two volunteers, Ms. Pakenon.
I'll take both of them.
Okay.
And then do you want to see it one more time before it's presented to the board? I mean, I'm reasonably confident we could bring back version 2.0 at the next meeting, if you'd like.
I think that sounds like a great idea. I see one of our members of the public, Ms. Elzy, is raising her hand. Ms. Elzy, you're being acknowledged.
Good morning. I was wondering if after you're able to compile this information, if I would, of course, have to check in with AZIABA, but if we could release some sort of like joint statement or have something posted on AZIABA's website. I had recently seen on Virginia State Association website that they had like a section of their website dedicated towards licensure, and I thought that was a brilliant idea. Now it looks like they're updating their website, so that page is down. But I would really love to facilitate something where we could have some sort of, joint statement or information that could be provided that we could just continue to refer community members to, specifically regarding licensure and practice in the state.
Thank you, Ms. Elzy. I believe, based off the head nods by committee members, that you've got a fantastic idea.
Madam Chair, you can task me to coordinating with AZIABA on that. So at a minimum, so much of our material is public record. So AZIABA merely needs to ask for it. But, we're also, they're a key stakeholder. And so, we are especially generous in, sharing information resources with each other. So I can facilitate that in a way that I think achieves the objectives that we all want to see. So.
So tasked, Ms. Pakenon.
Thank you.
All right. I think we've got two committee members who are going to work with Ms. Pakenon. I think we've had some good discussions surrounding this, and I think it will be very beneficial. Any further discussion or comments before we move on to the next agenda item?
I'm good, thank you.
And agenda item number 11 is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recent board action on committee recommendations. Ms. Pakenon, will you provide a summary of this?
Yeah. One just quick question before we, this may be a long conversation as well, the other one might be, is it possible just to have a convenience break at some particular point? If this is going to be a long agenda item, maybe just like a 5 or 10 minute break.
Fantastic suggestion, Dr. Davey. Let's take a 5 minute comfort break and resume at 11 a.m.
Thank you.
Off, have you returned?
Sorry, yes, I didn't go anywhere.
Okay. I anticipated, but didn't want to make assumptions there. Okay, we will resume agenda item number 11, which was discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recent board action on committee recommendations. Ms. Pakenon, will you provide a summary?
Yes, very briefly, Madam Chair. So, of course, the CBA routinely forwards recommendations to the board. With a recent board meeting, some of those recommendations were not adopted. And as a result of that event or events, I think it's raised some legal questions, at least for those of us who, you know, are aware on some level of those of that dynamic. So this matter is on the agenda, and anticipating that you want to receive legal advice in executive session, I have queued up a breakout room for that purpose. So the committee would need to make a motion.
I move that we go to executive session for the purpose of receiving legal advice. Okay, I have moved.
Second.
That's okay. I moved. Dr. Stenhoff seconded. Is there any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. All opposed? The motion carries. Zooming for just a second so Ms. Galvin can rejoin while we wait for Ms. Galvin to rejoin, because I don't imagine she is receiving continuing education certificate for the purpose of BACB CEUs. Ms. Malis, would you offer a code word?
Yes, Madam Chair. The next word is Harris. Harris.
So we are on agenda item number 11. We have gone to Ms. Galvin for the purpose of receiving legal advice. Are there any discussion or questions for Ms. Pakanon following her summary?
Did we do our summary? Was that the brief statement before we went in? Yes. So, I mean, just a couple of comments. Like, you know, appreciate the full board's work on looking at the recommendations that we put forward, and it's our task to put the recommendations forward to the board for their consideration, and it's their prerogative to move in a manner that the full board, that includes both psychologists and psychologists as well as public members, sees fit. It's not, it's not unprecedented that there are decisions made at the board level that are not unanimous. I think the important piece here is that the committee continue to do its work and the scope that it believes is correct, and provide the recommendations that that this committee lands on through majority, or whether it's through majority or whether through a unanimous vote. I don't think that we should be deterred from speaking to our licensees and talking to our fellow licensed behavior analysts with regard to either their strengths or their shortcomings, or providing them feedback through any of the processes that we go through. So my take on this is that we continue to do exactly the things we do. We continue to push our recommendations forward, and that we provide good rationale for why we're making those recommendations. And as a committee, that's pretty much what we're tasked with.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
I agree with that. I do agree with Dr. Davies' sentiments. I want to add, too, that, you know, part of democracy, but definitely like having a committee and having a board, is to have, you know, representation that is objective and, you know, is comprised of different experiences and different learning histories and different values and beliefs and what have you. And yes, our job is to come to some sort of as close as possible consensus. But at the end of the day, our right, and what right we're giving in due process to everybody else, right, is to have the dialogue and the components. And there's the precedents and the precedents and the role of the committee. But I think it's even bigger than that of, you know, we have an obligation as a, you know, part of a regulatory board, and then the full board as a regulatory board, to do these reviews and meet those expectations without having to aim to be agreeable. And so I agree with Dr. Davies' sentiments, because I think it's okay for us to, you know, we're tasked with these, and we it's okay for us to have differing opinions. We even saw it on this particular issue where there wasn't unanimous votes. That's okay. I think that sometimes I'm I'm a people pleaser. So it's hard to not want to compromise. But I think part of our role is so critical to the longer piece. And I do worry on this particular topic that we aren't going to be able to use the argument of this as a young profession forever. And if there aren't contingencies in place to train and support and hold the professionals accountable, we're going to come up against an issue of like, when is enough enough? And so I think these conversations and discussions as a committee and all of those things allow for us to, even if it goes to the board, the mechanism, you know, the makeup of the board at the time that we're no longer a young profession may look different. And all of these conversations may be very important in paving the way of setting that, again, that precedence. And I too, I've appreciated the full board and their inclusion and involvement in us. One thing that I appreciate about kind of their disagreement or a difference in opinion or different direction that they take from the committee is that it shows me that they're reading, they're interested. This is a topic that not just this topic, but that they're taking that part of it serious as well. And I think that that's really important because we also don't want them to just default to, well, the CBA says. And so I kind of see both sides of, I'm really appreciative that we did come up against something that wasn't just like, okay, what are the wishes of the CBA? Okay, let's move on. Because I think that it makes for more dialogue, and that dialogue protects consumers and protects the licensees, you know, in the big picture of a regulatory process. And so I agree with Dr. Davey that, you know, we need to do our job well. And the results of that may not always be what we had favored or, you know, does, but there's a lot of learning and process that goes into that is of equal value. And I'm excited to see that dialogue is happening at the board level, that it's not just a default.
Dr. Davey?
I had one other point I wanted to make, and Dr. Davis Wilson helped me remember that. And that is, you know, our committee is, each of us is a licensed behavior analyst. We are BCBAs. And there are, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, not very many of us on this. And the full board's makeup is much different. The full board's makeup, you know, Dr. Davis Wilson and I sit on there as the LBAs. There's psychologists, but there's also our public members that bring in some other pieces of discussion. And I think currently, correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Packman, but do we have 3 public members? Is that right? Ms. Shreves, Mr. Dinard, Mr. Wynn. And they, you know, they bring in something slightly different. Obviously, they're charged with protecting the public just as we are. But their perspectives on many issues, not just committee recommendations, it often comes or is often, you know, they often see things through a different lens. And it is, I agree with Dr. Davis Wilson, it is a constant learning experience. It doesn't necessarily mean that I change my opinion on what needs to happen clinically or what needs to happen professionally, but it is part of the process to be able to hear what individuals have to say and how they're perceiving the issues and how their approach of protecting the public may align or may slightly differ from other committee members. And so, I mean, those of you that don't, you know, often chime or listen in on the full board, it is, you know, it is something that every once in a while, just kind of, you know, just being on listen mode and hearing the discussions, it is a learning process for sure.
So is, I'm presuming your hand is down, Dr. Davey. I know that you have gained many skills related to the hand raising since last month, so I applaud your hand raising abilities. You're muted, so apparently the muting abilities have not improved.
That's actually my backup to not raising my hand. So if I mute myself and try to talk, it's like a check. So I have my own prompting system because I am prompt dependent. I'm not afraid to say it.
So as we talk
about... One other thing, Madam Chair, I've also enabled this. Like, I'm supposed to be like, when I physically raise my hand, that it's supposed to pick it up and raise my hand for me, but it doesn't seem to be working. But I enabled it. So if I look just like crazy trying to get that thing to go up, like I just want to make the record that that's why I'm not trying to swat a fly or having a medical emergency.
Dr. Reitz knows how to laugh. We are just, we are gathering our digital skills on Zoom. Okay. So as we kind of talk about this, you know, a particular issue, you know what? I'm actually going to save that for future agenda items. I'm going to wait until we get there a little bit. But is there any more discussion on agenda item number 11, where we are discussing the differences between committee recommendations and board adoptions? Okay. I don't imagine there was any motion that needed to be made. It was just some discussion. I think we move forward to the next agenda item. Okay. The next agenda item is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding committee member availability for the May 26th, 2023 meeting. Ms. Pakanon?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it seems that, again, this year we scheduled this meeting in close proximity, in conflict really, with a major event that perhaps many committee members, or at least some of our committee members, are attending. And, you know, in every instance, you know, we have to do quorum management, and at times that can be precarious. So the purpose of this agenda item was to ascertain whether we would have a quorum on the 26th. And given yesterday that there were some matters that were we were unable to complete, Ms. Michelson and I are working on a strategy to determine how do we make sure that we take action on applications as we are required to do in a timely manner, but that we also try to maintain, you know, what we can in terms of, you know, the relatively quickly scheduling those continuations. Also some additional context that I think is important. The April 28th meeting, CBA meeting, we had determined some months ago that that agenda would be specific to applications only. We can't suspend a month to not act on applications due to timeframes. But given that Ms. Michelson is on vacation and I will be attending a meeting of the ASPPB, the April agenda isn't practical for us to have matters that are related to complaints and investigations. So back to the original question, can we first see who, if there's any absences anticipated for May 26th.
I will not be here on May 26th.
Okay.
I too will likely not be here.
Okay. Oh, Dr. Davey, I think you are weighing in. Okay.
I'm going to raise my hand first.
Dr. Davey.
Dr. Stenhoff stopped laughing. I too am going to pile on and say that that week is extremely difficult given that my daughter will be graduating from high school and we have multiple events that we will be attending.
So I think what this means is that Ms. Michelson and I need to go back to the drawing board and you know, try to figure out how to pivot. So it seems that in May, we will need to come up with an alternative date for application reviews. And then we will need to have a plan, formulate a plan for reviewing what are not only the continued complaints, but the complaints that we believed we would be bringing you on that May 26th agenda anyway. So that's some foreshadowing that there will be, that the next request will be to schedule a meeting that's probably of some long duration.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
I'm just throwing this out here as a suggestion. Before I do, I'm mind blown that Brian has a daughter graduating from high school. I'm I'm a little bit having to regroup myself from actually hearing that out loud. That is crazy. One of the things that I was going to suggest is maybe to consider for the month of May, instead of a longer meeting. And I know that this is, I want board staff, you know, to kind of weigh in on it and work through the logistics of it, but perhaps some extra smaller meetings. I don't know about everybody else, but, I think that, you know, we do really good as a committee. The board meetings are a little bit different, although we haven't had very many long ones recently. But for a while we were having, I think we even had a 2-day one right before COVID. But I find that we do really good at about that 3-hour mark. And so I'm wondering if perhaps for the month of May, we try just a couple of smaller meetings to you know, kind of space out some of those requirements. So if we're going to see, you know, we requested documentation and now we have a set of complaints there, that maybe that's one meeting day in a smaller duration, and then see the next complaints in a smaller duration, and then maybe see the applications separate. Fortunately, it looks like the applications have slowed down just a little bit, but if they pick back up, I mean, I would, again, taking in just consideration my own thoughts, not board staff, I just wonder if some of those smaller meetings, just to get us through and get things caught up, would be more meaningful. I can tell you that the 2 days back to back, today and yesterday, as far as having time to review materials and all of that, it was quite a lot. I think by doing some smaller meetings, perhaps that'll break up some of that material review, but also break up some of the tasks. And I don't know your guys's process, but break up some of the timelines that you guys are trying to meet so that you can prioritize. But I just throw that out there. I definitely don't want it to be a committee decision without board staff input, because I know that that's asking of additional work for you guys, but I just worry that finding another full day, you know, or longer meetings starts to become challenging, for many of us, because we are actively practicing and working as well. Which I know some other, you know, boards are made up of like retirees or just university professors. No offense to those that just do university professing, but, but you know, I think, for many of us, like if I were to look into the future, May's already booking up for full days.
Ms. Pakenon.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And I always appreciate that staff is prompted to weigh in on matters like this. And in terms of the extra level of effort, it isn't tremendous on our part to schedule multiple meetings. There are some notice requirements, but that's pretty much something that we can, you know, if we had an extra meeting or two a month, that's not difficult. That's not daunting in any way. The only consideration that we would need to make with a multiple meeting scenario is that, so like the application review committee for psychologist applications, the CBA's review of applications needs to be choreographed very specifically with the board meetings. So we don't have a tremendous amount of latitude to shift in any particular direction that work. So that would be the one instance where we would probably be, you know, less flexible, more rigid about the timing. The complaints, you know, we hear you. And if it's the committee's preference that we just pick some, you know, random date, that work isn't tied, isn't linked and tied to a board meeting in the same way that application reviews are. So I just wanted that to be explained.
Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, if I may. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And I think for those ones, like even, you know, a Monday meeting or, you know, a Thursday meeting, I think it comes down to if we know that the meeting isn't going to potentially be, and it's just application reviews. I think that that's easier to establish a quorum. And this is just, again, just to get us through kind of May and vacations and all of the nuances of not being able to keep that Friday. But I also think that it's more palatable to make the request. And Dr. Davey, I'm just going to use you as an example, to say like, hey guys, can we meet Thursday for just applications for 2 hours? He may have things going all week. That's very different than, hey, we're going to have this agenda item. And I apologize, Dr. Davey, I'm not trying to speak on your behalf, but I think it's very different than having an agenda item that's like, okay, well, how, you know, we've got to find another full day. And sure, some of our meetings can go 2 hours, but then I'm going to have a hard stop because I have these other events. I just think that if it was broken down, I think that we may be able to conceptualize the schedules a little bit more to be able to say like, okay, cool. The Monday before the full board meet, well, not the Monday, because it'd have to be the Tuesday, because the same issue on Friday applies to Tuesday or to Monday. Well, and then travel Tuesday. Okay, Thursday it is. But no, I think that that's more palatable. And I think even if they're out on, and again, not trying to speak for everybody, but I think it's very different if I know I'm going to a conference and let's say I'm going to a conference that's in a different time zone, which this one has a slight one because it'll be mountain time zone. To say like, cool, yeah, I can jump on for, you know, an hour of application reviews versus like trying to figure out all the other stuff. So just, again, I know that it seems weird and like it seems like it would be harder to conceptualize, but a part of me just wonders if it actually would resolve the better issue. But I mean I can make either work, so I would, you know, defer to board staff and the committee to see what their thoughts on breaking some of that up.
Ms. Pecanon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So here's what I see shaping up. And this is where I think it's also imperative for Ms. Michelson to weigh in, because of course, you know, she carries the heavy burden of preparing complaints. So April 28th, that meeting will be specific to applications only. We will need to schedule a meeting for the same application reviews only as an alternative to May 26th. So we need to send out a scheduling poll to shift that meeting either ever so slightly before or ever so slightly after that date. So the next opportunity you would have to consider complaints would be potentially, well, either the June regular meeting or a special meeting in June. And this is where I think Ms. Michelson's input would be helpful.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, Ms. Pakkinen. And the date also depends upon the timing as well. So we have the complaint screening committee for psychologists, and I'm responsible for all the complaint reviews for that. So a lot of it is difficult from that perspective, and also ensuring that all the parties are available on that date. So I don't have a particular date in mind, but those are the things that I have to keep into consideration of my timeframes, as well as juggling complaints for two committees and then the full board.
So two scheduling polls will be issued, the alternative to May 26th, and then Ms. Michelson and I will figure out what is realistic for some additional time in June. And at the time, we would plan to maintain the regularly scheduled June meeting again for applications and maybe, you know, policy updates, those kinds of topics. So is everyone sort of, you know, following this new plan? Okay. Thank you. We anticipated that we would have to work through some of these challenges, but we'll figure it out.
Thank you, Ms. Pakkinen. We appreciate all of the efforts to try to accommodate everyone's delightful schedules. We will move to agenda item number 13, which is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding the ASIABA work group survey on the Access Medical Policy Manual 320-S. Dr. Davey, you're the lead on this. Will you provide a summary for the committee?
Yes, I will be happy to provide a brief summary with regard to this. Several weeks back, or I shouldn't say several weeks back, maybe a week ago, week and a half, received notification through membership on, you know, AZABA that there was a work group looking at AMPM 320S, which is the ABA policy for access. And that information came from an email with AZABA. And so I took a second to just kind of digest what was on there. And then I did reach out to board staff and asked if we could agendize this today to be able to have an open discussion. And then asked that Ms. LZ join us as well so that she could hear or be a part of that discussion. I was a part of the original work group that helped formulate some of the language around this, have not been part of the subsequent work group. But did, in reviewing it, have some questions that I think we probably should explore here as the committee, because I do think that they will have some impact on some of the discussions we've been having recently with regard to practice and with regard to definitions of trainees and some of the statutes and rules and regulations that are cited inside of this survey and some of the optional language that's provided. I do have, just since Ms. LZ is here, if she wouldn't mind, you know, just I have a couple of questions if she would entertain me, Madam Chair.
LZ, please entertain.
I use that term very loosely. So in terms of the work group survey, is this a survey that AZABA created or is this a survey that's coming from Access?
This survey was created by Dr. Woods from Access.
So is this an Access? So is it my understanding that this is a document that Access has pre-vetted this language and is now seeking public comment as they are moving forward to make changes? Or so tell me what I'm looking at, Ms. Elsie.
Mr. Chair,
I see Diana wanting to speak first. So yeah, you feel
yeah, Mr. Chair, if I may, I just want to disclose that I am on the smaller committee. And so I might be able to provide you kind of a summary and then if you're okay with that, then look at the questions, from the perspective of the summary of what the smaller committee is doing, where that will go with the larger committee and then how that goes out to public policy. So what had happened was there, has been several operational changes at Access with regard to very similar to what we just talked about as far as consistency. You know, when I was just mentioning like consistency between statute and rule across other boards and those sorts of things. Well, Access is kind of doing the same thing where they're trying to create consistency in policy across professions. So if something's too prescriptive for one profession, they're trying to establish a mechanism to make sure that they're not picking on one profession over another or being prescriptive on something that is resulting in a health plan being able to regulate a profession differently than they would regulate all of their other professions, and subsequently prevent MAPIA violations. And so the request for the smaller committee was to look at just some preliminary discussion around where providers are having hiccups with the health plans over interpreting the policy and using it against them. It appears that there has been multiple kind of complaints from provider agencies and families up to Access that nobody is privy to, but those complaints drove Access to believe that the policy may be too prescriptive. And as a result is again, allowing for health plans to dictate what a licensed professional does. And so what they want to do is develop a plan that coordinates where
the regulatory authority falls versus developing, you know, something that the health plans can say, well, no, you know, access says. So the smaller group is just preliminary, and the draft language is very rough draft of here were our initial thoughts. But rather than getting everybody trying to coordinate everybody's schedule to get a bigger group, the idea was to draft those initial thoughts out to everybody to get that input. So that's why there's three options. There's, you know, here's a sample language here, here's a sample language here, or do you have a suggestion of the sample language? Because I think they're just trying to streamline. They only have a certain amount of time, trying to streamline the process so that they can get it out to more of the public comment, but it is not currently intended to or going out now in any public comment capacity. Right now it's just, here's the policy, how it is. Let's, you know, break down the components and seek feedback.
I appreciate that. And I also want to own the fact that I did, you know, I don't get to attend every single AZIABA public policy meeting. In fact, I think probably in the last, you know, 3 years, maybe I've got to attend two, maybe three max. And so I'm not aware of everything that we have going on in terms of public policy. And I am super, like, beyond elated that we have a public policy committee and that you guys are actively engaged. You have, you know, no idea, Raquel, how exciting that is and how refreshing it is to see you all engaged in this work. So I think that does answer several of my questions. I think in terms of the email, I was thrown off by Dr. Woods being, her name being in there, and the fact that it is tied to an access policy, you know, and some of the information that was coming through. You know, I still, you know, think that there's probably a few things in here that we should have some discussion about if you've had a chance to read through it. And I think with this group, you know, in particular, given our charge to be able to regulate the profession, I would just want to make sure that that information is available as you guys, as everybody moves forward on it. I'm also happy to personally, I know that if this committee wants to write any feedback, that has to actually go to the board and then through the board up to the committee or up to the up to this work group. That being said, you know, individually, I believe we are, and Ms. Galvin is on the phone, is individually we are allowed as licensed behavior analysts and members of the behavior analytic community to provide our personal feedback. Is that correct, Ms. Galvin? I don't mean to put you on the spot.
I actually
have... That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
I actually would like to move to go into executive session for legal advice.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
The motion has been made by Dr. Davis Wilson to move to executive session for the purpose of receiving legal advice. This has been seconded by Dr. Davey. Is there any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, nay. The motion carries. Have all committee members back. We are resuming open session. We are on agenda item number 13, which is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding AZIABA work group survey on the Access Medical Policy Manual. Upon resuming open session, I saw that Dr. Stenhoff was cued and ready to go with some discussion. Over to you.
The discussion is not very exciting. I actually have to excuse myself from this meeting, as I noted. So anyway, I just wanted to state that for the record, for the minutes. So
have a wonderful day, Dr. Smith.
All right. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Okay. Dr. Davey.
I see Jean's back on camera too, so I see that she's been freed from her internet captivity that she was being held in at the AG's office. I just want to, Ms. Elzey and other representatives of AZIABA that might be on here, just want to again commend you for, you know, working towards opening up access, and I don't mean access as in our regulatory body, but I mean as in the ability of families to be able to get medically necessary services in the state of of Arizona, and being willing to have conversations with regard to policy that may be out there that is impacting either for the greater good or for to the detriment of the families of Arizona. So I just want to make sure that that there is a level of gratitude back to the individuals that are working on this and to those that have been involved. I think I just have a question so that we have some clarity on how best we can move forward as a committee to be able to provide some information with regard to the questionnaire that's out there. And that I think, Ms. Elzey, if you're okay to answer a question, the driving force behind this survey, is it something that Access is driving or Access approached AZIABA about, or is this something that AZIABA is driving and approached Access about it, or is it kind of a shared process? Can you kind of let us know who's, did she just, oh, there oh, she is.
Sorry, I just turned my camera on. Me.
No, you haven't. She doesn't want to answer. She left. You could share that with me. I'd greatly appreciate it, because I think that'll help us decide what our next steps are.
Yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely was initiated by Access. We had been in conversation with them just as the Public Health Policy Committee had received several inquiries about 320S and how they were running into barriers providing services in the state with the policy as written. So we were approached and I at kind of a joint venture, but it was absolutely initiated by Access.
Okay. Thank you. So I think that if that's the case, then I think that we'll probably work with board staff to initiate a discussion with not only AZIABA, but we're most likely with Access as part of this discussion. Understanding this is early on in the process, you know, that this is not a public comment phase by Access, but in the ability to be collaborative, just as you all are, you know, and how we brought stakeholders together in the past, I think that we'll work with board staff to be able to pull that together on our end, and with some guidance from Ms. Galvin about our ability to provide said feedback. Thank you. Thank you for being
here. Yeah, and if I cut out, please let me know. I might need to switch to calling in. My concerns are specific to, I don't even think this is at this stage, even at the, like the email was the, hey, for the sake of time, instead of running, trying to coordinate schedules and trying to do all of this, we want to just break down these sections of the policy that need to be edited and email for that feedback as a very informal kind of starting point. Because what happens is when everybody gets together in those rooms, it's, you know, a paragraph of information takes 4 hours to sift through. So the purpose of that, the stage where it's at right now, is very much just to say what needs attention and focus. And so I wouldn't even say that at this point, I think it's just kind of that initial assessment piece. And I think that for me, puts the committee, I mean, we have the ability to voice our opinion, but I feel that coming in as a committee at that stage, when all they're doing is saying like, hey, we're just trying to come up with some draft language that doesn't involve everybody meeting for 3 hours and trying to figure this out, there's still going to be the process of, here are these revisions. What does everybody think about these revisions? But rather than doing it in a, how do we get everybody to gather and schedule and do all, how they find that starting point to be, you know, be cognizant of everybody's time. And so this was that innovation, right? Of, hey, rather than us all sitting and meeting and trying to hash this out, why don't we just send out a survey and say, I'll make it easy for you. Here's a draft. And nobody drafted the language except Access. I mean, with some input in some areas, but for the most part, it was, here's a draft. And if you don't like it, please put your proposal here. And so I do think that that attempt is there. And then I think the next steps, when it's less of like, hey, what is your proposal? And more of, okay, now we need to move forward with making some decisions. then I think asking Access to come forth and present on what they found, what edits they want to make. But this, I think we're just very, very early. And I don't know that that was clear, but I can tell you that this is like the initial, like assessment of what even needs to be looked at.
Dr. Davey. You're muted, Dr. Davey.
Silly being so polite. Thank you, Dr. Wilson, and I appreciate the context of being early on. I think, you know, my purpose of that is, I think my response to that is, like, I get it, but I am concerned that those that are working on public policy, you know, that's something they're doing as a passion and they don't have endless amounts of time. And so if there was things that we could head off early on in the process or bring up as a, hey, you might want to think a little bit about this early on in the process could help drive the next stage, and versus spending time on something that perhaps the committee through its experience or knowledge or access to the board or access to the AG could say, hey, let's make sure to steer clear of X, or let's make sure to include Y. You know, if you're telling me this is not the stage for that, I'll appreciate that, and I'll take it for what it's worth, and I will wait till the proper moment. But I just would not want Aziaba's team and others that are working on this to go down a path that ultimately then we're going to ask them to reconsider, you know, fully based on some recommendation that we may have or may not have. So that's really just my concern, is, you know, when we can provide some, you know, some discussion. I don't know if it's opinion or if it's just like, hey, make sure to consider this or whatever it might be.
Miss Elsie?
Yes, and I'm so sorry. I have to excuse myself in just a moment, but I wanted to quickly note that I do think it was, you know, fairly informal. After sending the email out to Aziaba members, received a question of when is this comment or when do I need to provide the feedback by? And so I reached out to Dr. Woods and asked for a due date. And she said, oh, just by our next meeting is fine. So I do think, you know, it was very informal as far as, you know, she just collecting, getting some feedback from various, you know, members. So I do think that there is some time and work to be done. I will also be glad, happy to share that feedback. We meet again in the next early next week. So, you know, regarding just the feedback or confusion maybe that it did cause by sort of just sending out a, hey, give us this feedback. I do think it may have caused some concern that we were in public comment or what exactly was happening, because it is not public knowledge that this work group, continuing to meet. So I can absolutely give that feedback as well, because I do think it caused some confusion around, you know, when is this due? What is the intent behind this feedback and whatnot? And then Ashley Sanchez is on the call. She is the public policy co-chair, and she can, while she's not part of that work group, she can, you know, definitely jot down any feedback or answer any questions that she's able to as well. So thank you so much for letting me join, and I'll see you all soon.
Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Thank you. And thank you, Aziaba, for being here. I also wanted to just, I guess for me, and in response to Dr. Davey, I guess for me that because this is so informal and it's been opened up individually in a format in which, as like agency providers and whatnot, we have the ability individually to respond. I think I think for me it's important to understand and take into consideration the kind of clout that comes with the committee. And I think that clout is present whether we are even if we're acting not in the capacity and we're even giving that disclosure, I think there's that inadvertent clout.
Shampoo. I have no shampoo.
I don't know who is
Or Kathy.
Oh, no worries. And so I think like your concerns at this stage, like your comments are valid, but I think at this stage, this is like that kind of ask of providing that feedback individually so that they can, without again, meeting after meeting and having all these discussions, so that they can kind of fine tune and streamline and again, then take it to that next piece. And so again, I think here, by the nature of you being, you know, a member of the association and all these other things, and same here, right? Like I went in, I've actually provided comments twice because I filled out the survey. And then I was like, oh, I forgot something and went back. I worry about that perception of clout addressing it as a committee at this stage. I think it sends the wrong message as far as what message we're trying to convey about stakeholder collaboration. I think it sends the wrong message by stepping in at this stage. I think what we should do is, you know, potentially acknowledge that that perhaps this committee would be a valuable stakeholder and have board staff relay that to Access and request that when Access is, you know, out of this kind of just informal information gathering, that they come before us and present kind of their findings and what their thoughts are and where they want to take it next. And then we decide from there where it's at. Because like I said, I think it's so informal right now. It's going to, I don't want it to come across as a power move, if that makes sense.
Further, yeah, there you go, Dr. Davey.
So just so we're on the same page, like the idea of like trying to steer this one direction or another is not my intent by any means, or trying to strong arm, you know, a certain language versus another language. But it's exactly the point you made as to why I asked this to be agendized, is because if I personally fill out my comments and they're received by Access and by Ms. Sanchez and Ms. Elke, you know, they do know that both you and I sit on this committee. And so part of me wanting to have this conversation in open public forum was to maybe avert some of that. And so, you know, I'm happy to get some additional guidance from the Attorney General on how to best do that. It was not, and I apologize if it came off that way, as a sense of like the committee must weigh in, but I also am unsure of like if I'm going to send my personal feedback, like, is that seen as, well, he's on the committee and there you have it. So I've held off on my feedback and I was ready to present it here today and more of a Q&A session with anyone that was going to attend. And so I just want to make sure that we're clear on the intent of that discussion. And to the stakeholder piece, I think, you know, the committee as well as AZABA and Access at times have played well together, have always been able to be collaborative and recognize, you know, I think we are by statute required to talk to stakeholders about the things that we do. And so I would just encourage that kind of communication continue to be in both directions with both Access as well as with AZABA around those sorts of activities. Again, I could have, not saying I didn't or did, but it's like the email did just kind of raise some questions for me as to what was going on. And so without clarity to that, I, you know, this was the forum of which I felt most appropriate to find out given the number of statutes that were included in that document.
Dr. Davis Wilson. Perhaps not. Okay. Is there any further discussion or action that needs to be taken at this point? I see your hand is still up, Dr. Davis Wilson. I'm not sure if you're attempting to speak or if it's just a mistake.
Madam Chair, you froze. Can you hear me all right now?
Yes.
Okay. And I do want to clarify, I by no means, for Dr. Davy, I by no means meant to assume that that was your position. I was just making sure we acknowledged that that there could have been inadvertent consequences associated with that. And I do agree that, you know, in that forum, being able to give that disclaimer of, hey, this is my perspective as an agency owner and is in no way, you know, a perspective of the committee, is challenging. And perhaps that's good feedback just in general, so that maybe, you know, maybe there's a spot somewhere if they're going to send surveys to have, like, do you have any other comments so that we can note those things. But I do think that inviting, you know, inviting access so that they know that, like, we want to hear from them is great. I also agree that because the email was kind of vague, it was very difficult to kind of read between all of, you know, some of those other pieces, as far as what the intent of the committee was. So I just wanted to make sure that I acknowledge, like, I totally understand both perspectives. I just want to make sure that we're not, again, apologize, inadvertently stepping on toes, even if that's not the intent. And I also think that that these will be conversations that I agree with you. Like, I want access to be able to come forth and say, hey, here are some of our thoughts, you know, what, you know, or this is what we're doing, or this is what we're finding. But I don't know that until we invite them or direct board staff to invite them, that they're going to that they're going to just openly do it.
So is this a point at which we direct board staff to invite access, the appropriate party to join us for a conversation?
I feel like this would be a good point, just because, like I said, that the whole intent is to try to save the meetings about meetings and the delay in meetings and all of those things, because the policy as written is impacting providers today. And so I think they're just trying to streamline a process for the sake of time. And if we, you know if we think of, you know, even our conversation around what May even looks like for us, like, it might be that we are just giving them that courtesy to help coordinate it ahead of time, even though I don't know that there would be anything ready for them to present at this time.
Maybe it's an invitation to come forward. I didn't raise my hand, darn it. Maybe it's an invitation to come forward when they're ready to talk to us, you know, maybe prior to public comments, you know, to give some, to have just a discussion about what they're out there and maybe some considerations. We're not going to tell them what to do, but maybe that's the ask.
I completely agree with that. And again, just to give, I know the document isn't accessible to everybody, but just to give again that clarification, is it very much is just trying to find that starting point and what work needs to be done. The next step, I agree, that's when it would be a good time.
Ms. Galvin, is this something that we need a motion for? Do we need to move forward with seconding to have this party be present, or can this purely be direction to board staff?
It can be direction to board staff if you want the committee to act in a certain way as a body or to make a recommendation to the board. I would request that there be a motion.
Dr. Davy.
To be on the up and up, should we make a request of the board at the next board meeting that we would like to be able to do this, Ms. Galvin? Is that your recommendation, that the board be informed that we are going to invite access to perhaps give us, to have some discussion around any potential feedback or changes that they're considering prior to that, you know, prior to changing this policy?
In a situation like this, I would advise Heidi to contact the board chair and let the board chair know that this is the plan. Since you are the board chair, then I think the board or the committee can gather information without having to receive, you know, permission from the entire board.
I appreciate that. And with that direction, I would definitely want us to go that that path.
More hands.
Oh, that path being letting Access know you'd be happy to contribute at some point in the process. That path being to invite Access to a committee meeting.
Yeah, I think it would be, I think that the discussion with Access, and I'm open to my fellow committee members on this, is, you know, following this kind of more informal phase, but perhaps prior to the public comment section, that we be allowed to have a discussion with Access about particular things they're interested in looking at or particular directions that they're going to propose. I think something to that effect.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yeah, I was just going to add, you know, Ms. Dr. Davey, I agree with you. I think asking them to present, you know, just kind of the initial piece is a really good avenue for, again, reminding them of that stakeholder collaboration. Because it's been a while, right? And yeah, AVIABA's, you know, we see them all the time, and we're having that those coordinated efforts with AZIABA on a you know frequent basis where it applies. But I think that
we lost
Dr. Davis Wilson. We cannot hear you if you can hear us.
Having them come.
Dr. Davis Wilson, you're cutting out quite a lot. I cannot hear you.
And present in us kind of
lost her. I'm going to assume that she was okay with what we were suggesting. Ms. Galvin, were you, is that what you gathered from her?
Well, I don't want to make any assumptions about whether she approved or not. You still have a quorum. You can decide what to do.
I think we go forward with that direction to ask to be engaged somewhere in between this part of it and prior to the release of this to the for full public comment. And that is in an effort to be collaborative around particular statutes, rules, and regulations as they pertain to our position on this committee to both license and regulate behavior analysts in the state of Arizona.
Madam Chair, I just admitted Dr. Davis-Wilson.
I apologize. You would think living in Queen Creek nowadays, we've got a Costco, but we have horrible, horrible internet service. So I was just saying, I think it'd be an invitation as opposed to just like, and I'm not even worried about a time frame, but that invitation to come and just present to us like what, you know, what their thoughts are and what they're doing and what the stages are. And at that point, we can ask at that time, like, hey, when you get to this stage or that stage, you know, we'd like to be involved. But I just think that, you know, that probably that relationship probably just needs to be fostered a little bit.
Any further discussion on agenda item number 13?
No, just again, thank you to AZIABA for jumping on and talking with us. I appreciate that.
Okay, we will move to agenda item number 14, which is new agenda items for future meetings. Do committee members have any future items for future meetings?
Madam Chair, we'll come back with a draft communication for a request to the BACB for issuance once it's you're happy with it and forward it to the board and the board approves it. So that, I think we can get that on the next agenda.
Dr. Davey?
I was trying to raise my hand before. Ms. Galvin, if I so choose as an individual, I'm allowed to provide feedback, correct?
On those? In your individual capacity, yes.
All right, thank you.
Madam Chair, I can give the last code word since we are near that mark. The last code word is French Revolution. Again, that's French Revolution. Today is National Eiffel Tower Day.
I'm not sure if this is something that needs to be agendatized. I know that, you know, we have previously had some discussions surrounding utilizing like a matrix for making some decisions in regard to, for example, the unlicensed practice of behavior analysis in terms of licensees' license expiring. Is this something that we want to put on a future agenda to review some examples of this, or I'm not sure what that agenda item would look like, but does the committee agree that perhaps we should agendatize this? Did I freeze? Oh, okay.
No.
No, you're good. Everybody's agreeing. People are smiling.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't see you smile. You're just frozen. Okay, there it is. Got it.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm confident that I can pull together some content that you can review and react to.
Any other future agenda items? I didn't know there was the... that was just an invitation to the supervisor from Hume House, correct, who is providing supervision in the state of Arizona that was not licensed. That's not an agenda item or anything. That's just an invitation, correct?
Madam Chair, so we would I would probably grab the same agenda language that from that point in the past. I am not sure though, maybe it's not all that useful. I don't recall. It may have been specific to the review of an application. And so it was sort of it was tied to that application review and not an item that specified we're having a discussion with you. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I'm wondering how we address, you know, whether it is, I mean, I see this as there was a supervisor providing supervision to someone in the state of Arizona, and they were not licensed for 500 plus hours.
Yeah, agreed.
So staff can get with Ms. Galvin, I think, and we can craft some language that I think we want to use. So what we understand to be the case is that you want, do you want to talk to both the former supervisor as well as the individual? I don't recall her role at Hume House, but she's the one who made specific representations to this committee that appear to be contradictory to what you saw today in the documentation. So do we bring those forward together or as separate agenda items for fact finding? That's, I think, where we need Ms. Galvin to maybe provide us some assistance.
Be happy to do that.
Okay. Because I think you want to talk to both individuals, right?
That would be my pleasure.
Okay.
Dr. Davey?
I would just add, I think it's important that, you know, board staff, as you go back and kind of give us that timeline of when we spoke to them, you know, it let us know, like, you know, if this was like within, you know, a week of things that they then shut it down. I just think it would help us to be able to adjudicate the matter in a very fair and quick fashion, if that is the case.
Certainly.
Any other future agenda items?
Ms. Chair, if I may seek clarification. I was just going to say, Dr. Davey, would it then be the board staff go determine, you know, find that information, bring it to the next meeting, and then we make a decision as to whether we want to speak to the individual from Whom House. I mean, the non-licensed practice, that one can move forward with a request to speak, but are you asking that before we request to speak with the Whom House that we have an opportunity to read the board staff timeline, or are we directing the board staff to verify the concerns, and if there's a concern, move forward with requesting her to come?
My request was that we just have access to that information as we are speaking to these individuals. I don't wish to delay it. I just want to make sure that in the packet we have that information so we can explore it as part of the agenda item.
Perfect. That was just my own clarification. I appreciate that.
Now we move on to agenda item number 15, which is adjournment. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Dr. Davis-Wilson has motioned that we adjourn this meeting. Dr. Rates has seconded. Is there any discussion?
Discussion is just that thank you, board staff, for yesterday and today. I also wanted to thank Dr. Rates yesterday for leading us through a series of complaints, and just appreciate the time and effort that it takes to go through those. Having done some of those myself, I think Dr. Wilson feels the same. But without all of you, this doesn't work. And so I just wanted to say thank you before we closed out today.
Right. All in favor of adjournment, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed. The motion carries.
Thanks, everyone.